exciting time at the moment. We're actually, well, NASA is about to embark on a new journey of discovery in terms of understanding the planet Jupiter. So the Juno spacecraft, which you can see there, simulated against the big planet Jupiter, will actually be going into orbit around Jupiter next Tuesday, our time. So it's a very ideal time to start getting the word out about this exciting mission. It's got a number of firsts in it. One of the things being with the Juno spacecraft there, you can see it's very iconic with its three solar panels. It's our first solar-powered spacecraft to actually have ventured this far across the solar system. The other thing as well is that the spacecraft is spinning. It spins about two or three times a minute, and that helps keep it very stable. And so they can make sure that it's pointing and heading in the direction that they would like to go. Let's find out a little bit more about the mission. Well, firstly, why Jupiter? Why all of the excitement about going and seeing this gas giant in our solar system? Now, I often talk about Jupiter being the king of the planets. You've probably heard that numerous times. It is the largest planet in the solar system. But one of the things you may not be aware of is that not only is it the biggest planet in the solar system, but it's the biggest by far. In fact, if you were to take everything else orbiting the Sun, so including the other gas giants, including Earth and the other rocky planets, gather up all the asteroids, gather up all the comets, everything that we know or that could exist orbiting around our Sun, if you were to combine all of that together, you would still be less than half the mass of what Jupiter is. Okay, Jupiter is about 70% of all the mass of objects that is actually orbiting around. If you were to take all that mass, 70% of it sits within Jupiter. So it really is dominant in our solar system. And because of that, it was probably the first planet to have formed. And so therefore, one of the key things that Jupiter holds is some of the secrets about what the early conditions were like in the solar system, what the original gas cloud, what composition it had, what it was made out of, and also the processes that helped to form planets. And so in learning about Jupiter and how Jupiter formed, we're also learning about the early times of the solar system, and through that we can also learn a little bit more about how our own planet formed and how we came to be here. So the story of that formation, it's really the formation of the solar system is really the story, the formation of the Sun. So the Sun formed out of an interstellar gas cloud. It formed in the centre, and as it did, there was a debris, all the leftover material that didn't end up falling down and becoming part of the Sun, ended up forming a debris disk around our star. And it's out of this debris disk that all the planets ended up forming. And as I said, Jupiter took most of that stuff. And so Jupiter's kind of the leftovers from the Sun, and then we and everything else is the leftovers of the leftovers. And it also likely formed first. And being so big, it's had a lot of influence as well in how the solar system formed and what else might have gone on. So what are the key science objectives that the Juno spacecraft is hoping to discover for us? And there's four key things that it's looking for. One of them is the origin, as I mentioned, talking about how the planet formed and therefore what the early solar system was like. The other amazing thing, which I'm going to talk about quite a bit in this talk, is that Juno, even though it's not actually sending a probe or going to be entering through the atmosphere of Jupiter and actually physically going inside Jupiter, it's still doing some amazing experiments and has some incredible instruments that are going to be able to tell us for the first time what the interior of Jupiter is like. The other amazing thing is one of the things that makes Jupiter so iconic is its gorgeous atmosphere. Well, are we only seeing, with those beautiful bands, are we only seeing the top layers of clouds of Jupiter, or do they delve more deeply into the planet? And so it's going to look at the atmosphere and the composition and why we've got the different coloured bands that we see across Jupiter. Another big question is the Great Red Spot, the other thing that makes Jupiter so iconic. It's been there since Galileo first pointed a telescope up at the planet. And more recently, we're seeing that it does appear to be shrinking quite slightly. What's going on there? And lastly, Juno's going to measure for the first time the magnetosphere around Jupiter. And this is really what makes Jupiter quite a dangerous place, actually. And it is going to be dangerous for Juno throughout the mission. And we'll talk more about that a little later as well. So first off, as I said, this little spacecraft, it's going to go into orbit around Jupiter on Tuesday. And one of the things that it's going to be able to probe is, does Jupiter have a rocky core? Now, you've probably often seen textbooks quote, we often talk about this rocky core of Jupiter, and it's part of how we think planets formed, that there were these icy, smaller objects that managed to gather together until it formed big enough that it was actually able to pull some of the cloud, some of the gas that was left over from when the sun formed, and then that created the much bigger atmosphere of Jupiter and made Jupiter grow to be what such a big planet that it is today. But we don't actually have any evidence that that rocky core, that icy core, actually exists. And Juno's going to be able to track that down, and it's doing it in quite an interesting way. What they're able to do is they're going to be tracking the path of the spacecraft, the trajectory of the spacecraft as it orbits around Jupiter. Now, this diagram here, it's very exaggerated, but pretty much what it's saying is in the purple there, you can see what the ideal orbit of Juno would be. And that's kind of how we modelled how we work out most things when it comes to physics. We just imagine that all the mass of Jupiter is actually situated right at the heart of Jupiter. And so therefore you would say that Juno would follow this beautiful, very perfect curved path as it orbits around. But of course that's not going to be the case. And rather than have all the mass concentrated in one part, it's going to be spread out in various ways across the planet. And so just by watching tiny and really small perturbations of the Juno spacecraft as it orbits around Jupiter, that's how they're going to then be able to calculate whether which parts of Jupiter might have more mass and or higher gravitational field, and then be able to determine if it does have a rocky core. And this will inform our ideas about how planets formed. Because as I mentioned, the one main idea is that you do start with this rocky core and then that grows until you can bring in enough gas. And that's quite different to how stars form. If there isn't a rocky core around Jupiter, then maybe it is that Jupiter forms more like the way a star does. Maybe Jupiter collapsed directly out of the cloud of gas, out of the debris that remained from when the sun formed. And so that's one of the questions that Juno's hoping to answer. Now, we have had another spacecraft go into orbit around Jupiter before. It was the Galileo spacecraft. It was in orbit from 1995 through till about 2003. And it was able, when it first arrived at Jupiter in late 1995, it actually sent a probe plunging down through Jupiter's upper atmosphere to measure in situ what Jupiter was made out of. And I love, I just want to show you a graph in a moment of what it made, what it detected. But I heard Scott Bolton, who's the principal investigator of the Juno mission, talking about this Galileo probe, and said that in the 30 minutes that it plunged through the upper atmosphere, it went down to about 150 kilometres through Jupiter's atmosphere. That in that 30 minutes, it completely destroyed all the theories that had been around thinking about how Jupiter might have been formed. And so it's amazing what can happen when we get spacecraft up there to better understand. So I have included, this is the one graph that I've put in, but I think it really does tell the story about what's going on. So when the Galileo probe, as it descended down, it was measuring the different materials across in the atmosphere of Jupiter. On the left there, you can see it was measuring helium, neon, argon, krypton and xenon. They're all noble gases. They're material that gases that don't, or elements that don't interact very readily with anything else. And so, in fact, when we're measuring these for that reason, that's where we're measuring actually the pristine gases, the conditions that were around in the early solar system. Then to the right, you've got the elements of carbon, nitrogen, oxygen and sulfur. The things that we see quite as important, because that's the stuff that life is about. We want to find out, you know, was that around in the early solar system as well? So for helium and neon, so the other thing I need to point out about this graph, the line going through the middle at one. What that is that that's telling us the ratio of how much we're measuring of this material compared to how much is in the sun, the abundance of the sun. So both Jupiter and the sun, mostly they're made of hydrogen and helium, I should say that. And for astronomers, anything that's not hydrogen or helium, we call a metal. Okay, just it makes it a lot simpler for us. So they're both mostly made of hydrogen and helium, but it turns out that Jupiter seems to have a little bit more of these heavy metals than what the Sun does, more of the other stuff, and the stuff that, you know, things like that we're made of. Now, in terms of helium and neon, it was measured that there was less in Jupiter than what there is around the Sun, and in fact, this had been predicted by theory. It was an amazing way of actually confirming that some theories were right. The idea being that helium is heavier than hydrogen. And so, in fact, the helium had sunk down and it can be found more internal to Jupiter than up in this upper atmosphere. As I said, the probe measured down to about 150 kilometres. And the helium actually brings the neon down with it. So that was exactly what they expected. What they didn't expect were the dots up there that you can see in blue. Because what they showed that pretty much everything else, barring oxygen, we'll talk about oxygen in a minute, but everything else was much higher than the sun. There was more of these other noble gases, more carbon, more nitrogen, more sulfur than what the sun has. And this wasn't so unexpected. What was unexpected was that they were pretty much about the same. And that was the surprise. Because how much of each of these elements you get should depend on whether they're around depends on the temperature and pressure when Jupiter was forming. And it was thought that you should get a whole variation, as some of these elements would be much easier to have collapsed down, to condense down onto Jupiter, some would have been less. And the fact that they were all ended up being the same, that was what sent all the theorists back to the drawing board. Now, the idea is that you get these heavy elements on Jupiter because these gases get dissolved in water ice. And so you would expect that there should be a lot of water on Jupiter and therefore also a lot of oxygen, the oxygen bound up in the H2O of the water. But in fact, they discovered that there was a lot less oxygen on Jupiter than what there was in the Sun. Now, at the moment, the way that that's being described is just, well, the probe only hit one part of Jupiter. It hasn't measured the water content right across the planet. So there still could be a lot of water on Jupiter. This water, the water ice, could have brought all these other volatiles, all these other elements to rest here on Jupiter. Maybe it was just that the probe ended up hitting a very dry patch, kind of, if you will, the Sahara Desert of Jupiter. And one of the things Juno's going to be able to do is that it's not just going to probe one area of Jupiter, it's going to be able to look at the entire planet as a whole. And hopefully start to work out what was going on here. And so how is it going to do that? Because it's not sending, as I said, it's not sending a probe down into Jupiter at all. It's going to do this as it orbits around. And this is a kind of a might look a little bit of a higgledy-piggledy diagram, but I think the various images will help to explain how it all works. So over there on the top right, I've got a picture of what we look like in the infrared. We glow with our temperature, our body temperature of 37 degrees Celsius. That means that we're actually emitting infrared radiation. Well, it turns out Jupiter glows as well, but Jupiter is a lot cooler than what we are. It's down to about minus 145 degrees Celsius. And so instead of glowing in the infrared light, it glows at longer wavelengths, at microwave wavelengths. So it's giving off microwave radiation, microwave energy. And so this is why then I put the image of the microwave oven. Because It all comes down to how microwave ovens work. They work because water absorbs microwaves. And so they heat up your food, because if the food's got water in it, the microwaves are going to, the water's going to absorb the microwaves in your microwave oven. That'll energise the water and heat up your food. So if Jupiter is giving off microwaves, if there's water within the planet, the microwaves are going to be absorbed by that water. And so seeing how much microwave radiation is actually absorbed, is actually missing, is how the Juno spacecraft is going to learn how much water exists on the entire planet. The spacecraft is actually looking across three different bands of the microwave spectrum, six different energy wavelengths, and so that's what's there on the left. You can see going from longer microwave wavelengths, it will actually probe deeper into Jupiter. It's hoping to get down to about 600 kilometres down into the planet. And then as you get to higher, shorter wavelengths, higher frequency microwaves, then it'll only be probing sort of the top. And so by being able to compare what's going on, they're hoping to track down how much water is in the planet. It's a pretty amazing way to use the radiation of the planet itself, its thermal radiation, to actually use that to probe how much water is there. So Jupiter has these amazing coloured cloud bands, and they're always moving. And so you've got easterly facing bands, westerly moving bands. The red spot seems to be in a very stable area where we've got moving across the top going one way, moving across the bottom going the other way, keeping that stable region. How far those cloud layers? Are we just looking at the top surface of the clouds? Is this just weather conditions on Jupiter, or does it go further down into the structure of the planet? That's something that the Juno spacecraft is going to probe. And the other thing that's really important about this mission is that it's the first time that a spacecraft will actually orbit around the poles of Jupiter. And one of the things, this is actually an image of Jupiter. I often think it looks more like an artistic, an artist's painting of it, but it is actually, it's an image from the Cassini spacecraft, which was out in orbit, which is now in orbit around Saturn. And as it passed through Jupiter, it took this image. And you can see that you've got those beautiful cloud bands, as we saw earlier, but they're situated more towards the equator of Jupiter, whereas if you go up to the poles, it's a lot more mottled. And why do you have that change? What's going on? These are all things that Juno is going to help investigate. And lastly, it's going to look at Jupiter's magnetic field, its magnetosphere. And this is what makes the mission quite exciting and a little bit dangerous as well for the spacecraft. Because Jupiter has these very strong magnetic fields. It's about 20,000 times stronger than Earth's magnetic field. It's thought to be formed because internally to Jupiter, where you've got all this hydrogen gas, hydrogen and helium is mostly what Jupiter and the Sun are made out of, it's thought that the hydrogen internally to Jupiter is under so much pressure that in fact it's become a liquid. And once you get liquid hydrogen, that means that the electrons within that liquid can move around, and so you can actually get the hydrogen to be a conductor, to be a metal. And then by the time you've got Jupiter spinning, 10-hour spins very quickly, this sets up your dynamo, which can then drive the magnetic field. And what's really interesting about what Juno is going to do, so Juno pretty much has got an instrument on board that's like a compass, except not only is it going to be able to measure the direction of the of Jupiter's magnetic field, it's also going to be able to measure its strength. So as it passes by the planet, it'll really be able to map everywhere it goes the strength of the magnetic field and as well as its direction. The other interesting thing is that it's going to be able to measure this and probe right down onto that the surface of that dynamo to see how the magnetic field is generated. It's something that we can't actually do in terms of Earth's magnetic field, because the dynamo, the molten iron inside Earth's core, which is what is thought to establish Earth's magnetic field, it's hidden by our crust, because the Earth's crust is magnetised. And so that doesn't allow us to kind of extend down and see what's happening on the surface of the dynamo, whereas Juno's going to be able to probe that. The other thing I just want to mention, I'll come back to, but while we're looking at this lovely artistic rendition of what the magnetic field looked like, you can see that the magnetic field can trap charged particles. Brings down charged particles, and what that sets up is a radiation belt. Earth has the Van Allen radiation belts. Well, Jupiter's are much, much, much stronger, and so you can just see they're there, and they will eventually be a problem for the Juno spacecraft. So these charged particles, they get pulled down by Earth's Jupiter's magnetic field. They're mostly concentrated at the Jupiter's poles, where the magnetic field gets stronger, and they create amazing aurora. Similar process to what goes on here on Earth to create our northern and southern lights. Hubble Space Telescope is measuring the aurora around Jupiter, and it'll be doing that for almost daily for the next few months, so that it can track what's happening, how the aurora appear, and it seems to be that the aurora is quite energetic and excited at this time, which bodes well for the fact that the Juno spacecraft is almost about there. So we're going to get UV images from Hubble while the Juno spacecraft is actually flying over the poles of Jupiter and actually measuring the particles that are causing this excitation and causing these aurora. The other neat thing, on Earth, the aurora is all due to particles from the Sun. Whereas with Jupiter, you also have particles streaming in from Jupiter's large moons, the Galilean satellites. And so you can see there, I've just done a zoom up of an aurora around Jupiter. And you can see these little what are called footprints that are coming in from the moon of Io and Ganymede and Europa. So you kind of have this connection. The magnetic field of Jupiter actually reaches out and connects Jupiter with its moons, drawing off particles that are escaping from the moons and then being drawn down onto Jupiter. So it is going to be quite an amazing mission. As I said, a spacecraft that will remain in orbit around the planet, but is actually going to help us probe the internal structure of the gas giant. Does it have a dense core? Is that how planets form? What's going on with this liquid metallic hydrogen? Is that how the dynamo is created? Is that how the magnetic field is created around Jupiter? And then measuring down that first 600 kilometres of Jupiter's atmosphere. Is there water there? Is water how material was brought down? Those other gases other than hydrogen and helium, is water the way that it's brought onto Jupiter, or do we have to rethink all our theories completely? So a little bit about the spacecraft itself to finish up. How did we get here? Well, this Juno was launched back in August 2011. Now, it only had enough rocket fuel to make it out beyond the orbit of Mars. And then in 2012, it actually fired its rocket to send it coasting right back to Earth. And, of course, the reason for this was then it used an Earth flyby, a gravity assist, to then give it the boost needed to send it on its way out to Jupiter. And so it's been in cruising mode for the last 3 years. And then you may well hear a lot about the 4th of July. It's quite interesting. Again, I heard one of the NASA scientists talking about it. Normally, NASA scientists work in universal time, which is different to local time in the US. But when they realised that if, in fact, they worked in local US time, it would make it the 4th of July, whereas if they were in universal time, it would be the early hours of the 5th. They decided for this mission that they would go with the local US time because that helped them to, 4th of July being Independence Day for the US. So for our time, it'll be at around 1:18 p.m. on the 5th of July, and that's when it'll start an engine burn of about 35 minutes, which should slow the spacecraft down enough so that it's able to be captured by Jupiter's gravity. And then when it does this, it's on quite a highly elliptical orbit. And so it's going to be incredibly close to the planet, just about 5,000 kilometres above the surface. And then it'll venture out almost as far as the orbit of Callisto, one of Jupiter's moons, and then it'll come plunging back in again. So all the serious science, all the work is going to be done on those close encounters with Jupiter. That'll be about 6 hours that all the science, all the excitement will be happening. And then it takes about 10, 12 days for then the spacecraft to continue on its elliptical orbit and then come back through again. So in some ways you could, rather than thinking of this spacecraft orbiting around Jupiter, it's more like it's doing a series of flybys. And over the next 18 months or so, it's planned to do 33 to 37 orbits or flybys of Jupiter. Now, over time, those orbits are going to drift. When Juno first gets there, the spacecraft is actually going to be almost able to skim between Jupiter and where the radiation belt starts. But by the end of the mission, it's going to be travelling more and more through these radiation belts. And they consist of charged particles, and charged particles are not good. They're radiation. They're not good for your electronics. So they have enclosed all the instruments or the computers on Juno in a titanium vault. But even so, it's thought that after about 18 months or so, there'll be enough degradation that they're going to have to do something while they still have control of the spacecraft. Because one of the worries is that you don't want the spacecraft to grow out of control and end up possibly colliding with one of Jupiter's moons or another object around Jupiter and possibly contaminating those worlds with some sort of bacteria or something from Earth. So they have planned that this mission will end in 18 to 20 months and Juno will be plunged into the atmosphere of Jupiter. It's not going to be, you know, so many of NASA's missions now are so highly successful and they just keep going and going. The Mars rovers are some of that, because the Cassini spacecraft has recently been extended again. It's been around Saturn for, I think, a decade now. Whereas this is one where they are, there is a limited time period for them to be able to do their science. So It's all pretty much happening in the next week or so. We've got our fingers crossed for all the scientists and the engineers, hoping that everything goes to plan. This is the only instrument with JunoCam, and it's the only instrument on board Juno that can actually take coloured photos, optical photos. And in fact, it's there. It's part of Juno's public outreach. And so you can search for JunoCam, and they're actually wanting... because they can't use the camera to view every single part of Jupiter, what they've actually asked is for amateur astronomers to take photos of Jupiter and to highlight the regions that they would most like JunoCam to take a look at, particularly around the poles of Juno, because we've never seen the poles before. And then they've opened up the whole scientific process of how a mission is undertaken, in that they're hoping that amateur astronomers, and they actually have been uploading images onto the JunoCam website, and then they're inviting the amateurs, the community and the public to vote on which are the best images, and to put forward scientific reasons of why you might want to look at those. And then when they gather the data, they're actually going to put the raw data there for the public to be able to work with and play with and analyse and see what they can produce. And so it really is a chance for everybody to become part of this mission. So it's a pretty amazing feat that they're trying to do. They certainly haven't shied away from any of the hard parts of understanding what's going on at Jupiter, but hopefully it will start to unlock some of the keys about how the solar system, the early times of the solar system, and how planet formation. And in some ways, this isn't just talking about how our own solar system formed, but of course now we also know that there are thousands of planets orbiting around other stars out there, what we call exoplanets. Many of these that were found are of a Jupiter class. And so this mission may well also give insights into how those hot Jupiters as well formed around other stars out there in our galaxy. And lastly, just to finish up, I wanted to grab, there's an amazing, the Juno website has an amazing amount of material on it. And these are just some of the engineers and scientists that have been working on the mission. And I think it's always important to remember how much goes into this. And one of the, I really do recommend that you have a look at the site, because one of the videos that they have is talking about how each of these scientists actually got involved and got interested in space, and what was it that drove them to now end up being working on the Juno mission. And it's quite inspiring to hear about their journeys and what they're doing, and you know, fingers crossed that all goes well for them in the next few days. So thank you very much.